This is The Table Business, a Sounds Like Adventure podcast all about people doing great work in the tabletop world. On this show, we're going to speak to the independent creators who make the games that you and I love. I'm your host and the DM of Sounds Like Adventure, Jack Traynor. Hey there. It's another episode of The Table Business. It's me, your host, Jack. How you going? Amazing episode for you today. We're heading back to Australia, and today we're joined by a friend of the show, actually. So you may know him as Sociocerebral on Instagram. You may know him as Idioms of Normality on YouTube. It's Dr. Paul Mason. He's an anthropologist, and his neck must be really sore from the amount of hats that this guy wears, because he's a YouTuber, an anthropologist, as I mentioned, and he's actually the anthropologist behind the board game Hexcrement. So there's currently a crowdfunding campaign going on for Hexcrement, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Paul's going to tell us all about the game, why you should consider backing, and why there's more to poo than you might think. All right, let's get into it. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's start things out. So you wear quite a number of hats. You're an anthropologist, you have a YouTube channel, and you're part of a new board game that has a crowdfunding campaign at the moment. So just set the scene. Who are you?
Yeah, well, I am trained as an anthropologist, and my CV does look like a pizza with the lot. And one of the most recent toppings is this dung-filled adventure called Hexcrement, where players get to step into the six-legged shoes of dung beetles in their search for smelly treasure, and which they have to bring home. And the first dung beetle to bring their smelly treasure home wins the game.
Well, we're going to talk more about that soon. But how did you find yourself getting into this whole tabletop world? So the listeners of Sounds Like Adventure know a little bit about you already. You've made a small appearance on that show. So for anyone who didn't hear that episode, how did it all start for you?
Okay, well, I've really enjoyed board games for a very long time. I was an avid player of Monopoly as a primary school child, but always struggled to find people to play with me. And my mum was a massive Chinese Checkers fan, which I still love to this day. And with my children, we've always enjoyed making little board games together. So we've made little, you know, just on A3 posters, snakes and ladders games, mazes. And Hexcrement came out of watching a friend of mine, Stephen Grodzicki, who runs Pickpocket Press, and he's released a lot of RPGs. And he playtested a game of his called Old Mage, and it was a lot of fun. And I was looking at it, and I'm like, I love this game, but I need Stephen here to play it. And then I was like, hang on. Like, how would I adapt this for my kids, and how would I simplify things and make it so my kids could play this really intuitively? And being an anthropologist, I've watched a lot of board games, and I think about not just the dynamics and mechanics of the game, but also those moments outside the game where people get frustrated about packing the game up or how they lay the game out onto the table. And so I was thinking a lot about the design features that make it enjoyable to sit at a table and get everyone's attention focused on a particular task in front of them. And so one of the key innovations of the game is putting a dice tray in the middle, and playing around with the way in which all the pieces were assembled was sort of part of playing with my kids. And then when we stumbled across this idea of putting these hexagonal playmats around the dice tray and then moving the pieces around the dice tray, in the first edition of the game, it was not dung beetle themed at all. It was just sort of playing around, mucking around. My kids were really understood what was going on because we'd done that before. And then my son, who wasn't winning the game in any shape or measure, was frustrated and he was running away, but he'd come back to the game and he was eager to play this through to the end. And it was a 20-minute game the first time we played it. He was 6 years old. And I was like, hang on, I think I'm actually onto a winner here. To have a six-year-old pay consistent attention to a board game that they'd never played before for 20 minutes was really something. And then he's played games that have lasted for much longer than that as we were playtesting it. And he's come up with little ideas for the game, and my daughter's come up with other ideas for the game. And my son actually came up with the idea of colouring the poo differently, which was a really brilliant idea because it plays into the whole conservation theme of the game as well.
Before we get too far into the weeds of the specific mechanics and things like that, I guess, like, what's the elevator pitch? What's the game? What's Hexcrement?
Okay, Hexcrement is a conservation education board game because it's themed around dung beetles. And some people don't actually know what dung beetles are, but they are really interesting and fascinating little creatures that go around looking for poo, for the waste of other animals. And there's actually an Australian story behind this too, because when the first Europeans came to Australia, they brought with them their own animals, cows, goats, sheep, camels. And this inadvertently brought with it a waste management problem. All these cow paddies were littering the landscape, and there were no dung beetles, native dung beetles in Australia that naturally liked cow dung. And so that created a massive blowfly problem in Australia because we had flies were, of course, gravitating towards all these new fresh dung piles that were piling up across various farmlands. And it wasn't until we introduced dung beetles that specifically liked the cow paddies and the goat droppings that we were able to reduce the fly problem that was brought by Europeans to Australia. And so the conservation message there is that dung beetles play a really important ecological role in waste management. But also, dung beetles don't like all poo. Dung beetles have their particular flavours that they particularly like. So in our game, the red dung beetle likes going for the red poo. And so if the red dung beetle finds the red poo and brings that home first, then they win. But the red dung beetle might find green poo. Now, poo is poo, and the red dung beetle will go, oh, okay, all right, green poo's all right, but I'll need more than just one green poo. I'll need something else as well. So he might find the blue poo as well. And so with two pieces of poo that aren't his favourite or her favourite, he can still or she can still win the game. But if you find your favourite dung, then that's what you want to bring home. And in the game, dung beetles can also battle for poo, and this is something that happens in the wild as well. Dung beetles will battle each other for poo. So with the roll of the dice, meet it doesn't beat it. So just protecting the person who found the poo first, just a little bit. I've played it with kids. I've played it with adults. I've observed kid-only games and I've watched adult-only games. And by far, everyone really enjoys it. In fact, when I've played it with adults, the first time they play it, they're still trying to get their heads around it. It's a learn-as-you-play game. You make sense of it as you go along. You don't need to read too many instructions before you set it up. There's 7 instructions you read. You set it up in 1 minute, and then you play the game. You learn it as you go. And every adult I've played it with have gone, I've now really mapped it out. I want to play it again. But the most enjoyable games for me to watch are between adults and children because it creates such a great space, this structured space for adults and children to really enjoy some quality time together, to have a great old laugh about finding poo, losing poo, having to give your poo away or battling for it. And it's always hilarious. And even if you're losing, it's still an enjoyable game. So it's this really, really relaxed mix of chance and strategy. You can be using your memory skills to remember where things were around the board. There's some snakes and ladders dynamics. There's some memory dynamics. There's a bit of Ludo dynamics. There's even a tiny bit of Whiz Wars. I played Whiz Wars for the first time recently and I realized, oh, actually, there's a little bit of Whiz Wars. And of course, there's also a bit of Old Maid from Stephen Grodzicki in there as well.
Wow, there's a lot going on. So You mentioned this just then, and I noticed this on the website as well, that it says it's a game that turns play into an adventure of learning and conservation. Why are those two features so important to you in this game?
So I've worked in conservation education. I worked at Taronga Conservation Society Australia for 4 years, and I got to see what conservation education looks like for the inside. I got to take part in it. In fact, I was running leadership courses in conservation education. And it's something I felt strongly about for a long time, but the vehicle for it is sadly a little bit lacking, particularly in Australian education. It's not one box that teachers have to tick. It is this box that sort of is an elective on various areas of the curriculum, but it's not a necessary thing. And so a board game is a beautiful medium through which people can just understand something really basic about biodiversity. And that is, biodiversity is so much more than just understanding variation and difference. Biodiversity means that not all dung beetles like the same poo. Different dung beetles like different poo. And if you don't get the right combination, then you're not going to manage waste management in the forest very well. And having an educational dimension to the board game, I feel, is also a really important way to not just have a product that is enjoyable, but also a product that's educational. Because you can justify it as a parent saying, yeah, I'm having a great time. This is really good quality time. But also, my kids are going to walk away knowing what dung beetles are, understanding a little bit about them, and also playing or role-playing what it's like to be a dung beetle when you encounter a rock or a trap, or when you get turned around by, you know, the wind or humans or whatever. You get to role-play that and imagine how challenging life must be being a dung beetle. And I remember one of the kids that play-tested it recently ran up to me when they saw me and said, oh, Paul, I saw a dung beetle the other day and I picked it up and I put it back on the grass. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You know, a bit of animal welfare there. Doesn't go astray.
And what's your favourite thing about this game?
My favourite thing about it is how much fun I've had playing it with people and how much community I've created through that too. One of the people who named the game was a playtester, a local GP, who we roped in for one of the early playtesting. Originally it was called Hexalit, and then this GP said, why do you call it Hexcrement? And it was just like this bing moment, light bulb moment. Everyone's like, yep, that's the name. That's what we're calling it. I've had a really great time getting to know the graphic designer behind the game, and we've become best mates through that process. It's really been a family project that has been something completely novel and interesting, and something I would never have done had I not been so embraced by the board game community on Darkenjung Country, where I'm just meeting all these people who I would never have met before and spending quality time playing board games. And then that launches into, hey, do you want to come over for a barbecue? Let's go grab a meat pie. It's been a really lovely experience. Spending time with people, and I think that's what board games do, is that they give you an opportunity to spend time with each other and not have to talk about the weather and not always have something to talk about, but you're there and you're sitting in the same space as each other, enjoying each other's company, and there's going to be quiet moments, and it's perfectly acceptable to be quiet for long periods of time because you might be thinking about the game, you might be thinking about something else, but you're just enjoying the company of others in a very structured space.
Mate, how Aussie are you, by the way? You go off for a barbecue or a meat pie. Those are your two options. Do you go and kick a footy afterwards? What else do you do? Amazing. And there's a crowdfunding campaign going for this right now as well. So how's it all going? How can people check it out? Tell us more.
Yeah, so we're on Possible, another mate of mine who launched a game called Rockstack. A really fun game. He used Possible. It's a platform I've used before for an educational children's book that I wrote back in 2016. And I like the way the platform operates. We want to get up to 1,500 copies of the game. That's the first print run of the game so that we can make copies of the game available to people at cost. So it's all or none. If we're successful, then people who have pledged money can receive a copy or more if they want to receive copies for their nephews and nieces or friends and uncles and parents, or, you know, it's the perfect dad joke gift, I think. And we hope to be successful by the end of April.
And just for anyone who's listening, what is the final date for the Kickstarter campaign?
It's 28th of April. So make sure you get your pledges in before 27th of April if you want copies of the game prior to it going retail, because at the moment it's 10 Aussie bucks for each copy, which is just a bargain, because in each pack you're getting a dice tray. Retail they're 14 bucks, so right there you're getting your money's worth. The dice are probably $2 each. We're using D8 dice as a bit of a novel thing, but also so beetles can move faster around the board. You're getting some 6 beetle tokens, 6 direction coins, 48 little instruction tokens for around the board that you don't need to understand until you stumble across them. So all in all, people are getting a really good deal at getting this at cost. And we're really interested in getting it out to people at cost, because we want to share with people just how fun this game is. But also my partner, who's an entomologist, really wants to get that message out about conservation education and that dung beetles, they perform a really important ecological service and they're really fascinating and valuable.
So, just to wrap things up now, so we've stayed very much in the board game world, but we definitely have a little bit of a TTRPG bent on this show. So let's talk a little bit about it, because I know the folks at home will want to hear. So to tell us about your specific avenue into the TTRPG world, and yeah, what's going on now? What's your characters? What's happening? Just break it down.
Actually, I've got a few characters now because I've done more than one campaign now, and I've got a long-standing campaign that I've been a part of for more than a year, where I'm a Viking called Thrund who holds a shield, and he has this really wonderful magic weapon that he picked up from one adventure or something, and this magical weapon is really fun. I'm going to tell you about it because I think you might like it. It erases the memory of the person it kills. So it's this axe that shadow streaming off this axe, and whenever someone is killed with this axe, the name of that person is erased in the history books. So no one ever remembers the name of that person, which is brilliant because as a consequence of possessing this axe, Thrund, the character, also becomes highly paranoid that people will forget who he is and how great he was. And so the funny thing is, Thrund is like this... He wants to show off to everyone and I'm responsible for the kill and I did that. Well, you wouldn't have been successful if it wasn't for me sort of character. But everyone's like, well, who did you kill then? Like, if you're so great, who are these people that you've supposedly killed? And Thrun's the only one who's like, well, that guy whose name I can't remember. So it's a lovely little dynamic having this magical tool.
So we always end these chats with a couple of recurring questions. So let's jump into the first one now.
I should have prepared these. Yes, I have been listening to this podcast and I'm familiar with the questions, so I'm highly unprepared.
And you may be familiar that I do sort of switch up this little first one a little bit depending on the specific person. So I guess what's one thing that people don't realize about people like yourself who are creating an independent board game?
You know, supporting doesn't mean you have to actually necessarily give money. I think that's the one thing that I really want to get across to people. Supporting the project could you just share the URL? Can you just let other people know about it? I love people who can be very direct, but also at the same time, I'm like, you know, like one person said, oh, thanks, I'm not going to be buying a game. And I'm like, dude, I see you spending so much money on games every week. And you just like flatly slapped me on the face metaphorically. You know, like a gentler thing would be, hey, I'm not going to share the game, but is there another way I could, like, I'm not going to buy a copy of the game, but can I, you know, share the URL or how else could I support you? How else could I encourage you? And, you know, I think that maybe it's a little bit of tall poppy in Australia as well. Like, we just don't recognize the importance of fanning the waves of other people's work. And I think finding those people that support you, like the maker of Rockstack, for example, has been just lovely and supportive. The GP who named the game has been lovely and supportive, and finding those people who really spur you on is really important in life, but also not getting completely rejected. I think I'm going a bit off track off the question, but that's all right. I'm not getting completely rejected when someone says to you, I'm not going to buy the copy of the game, and just very quickly going, well, if I could ask for your support in another way, not everyone enjoys board games. You are going to enjoy this one if you do play it, but, you know, that's fine if you don't want to even embark on it. But could I ask you to share the URL, or could I ask you to consider telling one other person about it? And just finding a gentle way to educate people about how valuable it is to feel supported. And, you know, like, I'm a massive supporter of Sounds Like Adventure, and I really want to make sure that I'm supporting you in my comments and my likes. It doesn't take much time for me just to quickly heart something that you put up on Instagram or on Facebook. And I do that because I want to hear more of Seok's naughtiness in these campaigns, and I want to know what's going to happen with Indifference Jones. And, you know, and so me doing what I can to let you know that I'm listening is me going, I want more of this. And yeah, I think we need to educate each other on the importance of support. And I think I need to talk to myself about that too. Like, sometimes people have told me, oh, you know, a lot of my friends are musicians and they're like, oh, I'm doing a gig and I can't always make it to the gig, but I want to find ways that I can still support them and let them know, hey, I can't drive 70 kilometers that night, but I want to let you know that if I could, I would.
Second question, your first ever character in a tabletop game. You may have just told us about him, but I know you have another one, which is very good. So maybe tell me about that one.
You know what comes to mind actually is I reconnected with a friend of mine from high school, and I just saw this post up on Facebook. I'm like, is that a D&D Dice Tower mug? And he goes, yeah, it is. I got into it. And I'm like, oh. And I said to him, how is it possible that we never got into D&D at school? Because we used to play in the playground. And for some reason, I always enjoyed the dwarf character with the axe. And we weren't doing D&D. We were just role-playing in the playground, playing some variant of Tiggy or Bali or something. And I said to him, it's really funny that we didn't get into it at school. And he said, yeah, but don't you remember that we did those how to host a murder parties? Right. We used to do how to host a murder parties where you'd get 7 or 8 people together and you'd try and figure out who did what. And that was really fun. So actually my first role playing in a tabletop RPG was sort of being the murderer.
Wow. So for anyone who doesn't know what that is, because it's quite amazing to think about now that this was a thing that people did for a while. What were these murder mystery parties?
Yeah, murder mystery parties were, I actually found one of these at an op shop recently, unopened. And so there's a cassette in there waiting to be listened to. And so you'd pop the cassette in and it would set the scene for you. You know, you've all arrived at some party or some event of some sort. You all get a character description, and I would get, when I hosted these parties, even though it was high school or university, I would get people to dress up as their character. And so you could be dressing up as a chauffeur, you could be dressing up as, you know, a 1920s dancer or something. And we had a lot of fun dressing up and then playing that character for the night. And you're not allowed to turn the page until everyone's finished revealing what they have to reveal and attempting to conceal what they're not allowed to conceal. And one of the 8 people, even the murderer doesn't necessarily know that they're the murderer until the last page. You've got to figure out who you think, based on all the clues, and you get increasing number of clues for each page you turn, you've got to try and figure out who you think the murderer is. And so it's a cooperative task, but there's also a little bit of resistance to that cooperation if you think or suspect you may be the murderer based on the information you don't want to reveal about yourself. Now, this could translate really nicely to RPGs like D&D or Genesis or whatever you're playing, because I saw a nice little technique, and that is to write rumors about your characters, some that may be true and some that may be false, and then distribute that to your other players. And in fact, you might have shared this. I don't know if I'm saying it because I saw it on Sounds Like Adventure, but I tried this out, and for a character that I'm developing for a cyberpunk campaign that I'll be doing, actually for a friend who's writing a book, he wants to use this as a mechanism to push him forward in his book writing. And so I wrote some rumors about this character a couple were true and a couple that were false, and I'm distributing those to the other players so that I'm forced to negate, no, that rumor's false, or to play up the rumor that I want people to believe.
Very cool. I won't take credit for that. That's not something we've done on Sounds Like Adventure. So whoever came up with that, that's a very cool idea. Final question. When you think back to your time spent around the table over the years, do you have a favourite story or a favourite memory?
Look, I may have mentioned one of my early ones with Hexcrement was in the first time we playtested a very primitive mechanic for what became Hexcrement, watching my son, who was 6, completely involved and completely engaged and absorbed into this game, running away from the table because he was having this moment of frustration, but coming back to the table because he was like, no, I've got to see this through the end, even if I'm not winning. That is the kind of frustration I like to see around a table. And I think as an anthropologist, you want to, I think we could develop a taxonomy of frustration where hitting just the right amount of frustration that someone doesn't want to throw the table up, but just enough frustration that someone goes, oh, this is juicy. I want to overcome this challenge that has come to me. Like, that's when it's really fun. When someone's like, oh, challenge. I want to overcome this. It's frustrating enough for me to want to just dig my heels in and get through this obstacle. That's that's probably the fun moments, the most enjoyable moments to be a part of.
So, Paul, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Where can people find out more from you?
Well, Hexcrement is released by Elytra, A-E-L-Y-T-R-A, and you can find out about Hexcrement on Possible, on YouTube, on Instagram, all through Elytra, A-E-L-Y-T-R-A. But if you want to find out about me, I am an anthropologist. I'm teaching currently at Sydney University and Macquarie University, and I've published on a whole range of things from tuberculosis to human evolution to choreomusicology. And so if you Google Paul Lason choreomusicology, you'll find that there's only one Paul Lason that has done that. But otherwise, you'll find that I was the former world's fattest man. That's not me. You'll also find Paul Mason, the cartoonist. That's not me. Paul Mason, the radio jockey. Not me also. So
okay. Don't go to any of those ones, I guess. Those links will be all in the show notes. But Paul, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jeff. It was great to be chatting with you. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Table Business, a Sounds Like Adventure podcast all about people doing great work in the tabletop world. If you'd like to know more about anything we spoke about today, all the links for all the people that we spoke to are available in the show notes. Or head over to soundslike_pod on Instagram, and we'll definitely be talking about them there. And if you liked what you heard, why not check out Sounds Like Adventure? That's our main show. It's an actual play podcast with fun roleplay, short runtimes, and great sound design. But to make sure you don't miss the next episode of The Table Business, make sure you subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And a 5-star review really, really helps to get a few more people to see the show. And we hear it, Sounds Like Adventure. We would be so grateful if you took the time to do that. All right. With all that in mind, we'll catch you for the next episode of The Table Business.